Blog Talk Radio.
Take back control.
gentlemen, welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. I'd like to thank everybody for listening tonight, and then thank the folks that are going to listen to it later, either from the archives or downloading it to iPods from iTunes or wherever you listen to it from. Tonight we want to talk about several things that can help improve your way of life and help to get you started in your self-reliance path. We're really talking about bartering, about seeds. We'll start our discussion tonight on gardening, and then we'll finish up with the discussion of apple seed promotions. We started to last week, but we started running out of time, so we'll try and give a little bit more time tonight. Our call-in number is 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. You're welcome to call in with any questions you have or any comments. We would like folks to call in at the beginning of the show to tell their local crews thank you, their local Appleseed crews thank you for the work that they're doing, because everyone who works for Appleseed, who pushes the Appleseed mission ahead, is doing it, well, everybody does it for their own reasons, but nobody's getting paid for it. So whatever reason you have for doing it, that's why you're doing it, but it's not because you're getting paid. And while the Appleseed Project is really good at pushing its membership to work hard to try and get the message out, get people off their couches, teach them the absolute best fundamentals of rifle marksmanship program in the nation, and talk to them about the folks who were at Lexington Green and North Bridge in Concord and along Battle Road on April 19, 1775, what brought them there, who they were, what they did, why they did it, and then some discussion of the vision that the founders had for this nation. And everyone is doing it without getting paid. That doesn't mean that you can't give them a clap on the back, a metaphorical one, on the radio, and tell them thanks. So if you want to call in, 347-308-8790. And of course, if you have any experience with bartering while we're talking about that, or our discussion of seeds or in gardening, you're welcome to call in during those times too, okay? That's the whole reason that I pay for 50 phone lines, so that you guys can call in and talk. So I challenge you guys to call in tonight and add to the discussion. And the whole reason I'm doing this is for you. I already know what I know. Now, I mean, I know some things that you're going to call in and tell me, but that's one of the reasons I need you to call in and talk to me, okay? I see that Sam, my co-host here, Sam D, is telling me that he just did a roundup tonight and got 17 eggs. Now, I'm wondering is that like every night you get 17 eggs? Or is it?
It is.
You know, every night? There you go, man. That's a good deal. You got something to start bartering with right there.
I do it every day.
So have you taught any of your dogs how to suck eggs?
Nope.
No.
But they get to eat a lot of them.
I bet they do. My dogs love eggs too, but 17 a day, that's pretty good. That's real good. It's because you're talking about a little over 100 eggs a week. That's some good trading stuff there. How many of those eggs are viable for eating?
Oh, all of them are. They're all good to eat.
Well, that's good. And then you've got, let's see here, it says you got 19 hens. That's pretty good, man. That is really good.
I swap them off for all kinds of things, food for me, hay, you name it.
Well, that's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about tonight on is bartering. Do you do any bartering? Well, you just told me you did. You're swapping the egg. What will you swap eggs for?
Oh, sometimes I swap eggs for car parts. you know, just all kind of things. A fellow might have some seeds that I want especially, or some already grown vegetables. I'll swap for that for something that I don't grow myself. And I don't just swap eggs. I swap my services doing different jobs for things. And I got a neighbor that needs things done around his place. Can't do much. He mows my lawn. I take care of a few things for him.
There you go. Well, I do quite a bit
here,
too.
We all look out for each other.
Yeah, we got some neighbors that will plant different things through the year, and usually they'll have, like a couple of folks will have, one person I know plants turnips, and they will plant, about a half acre. And for those of you that don't know how much a half acre of turnips are, that's a lot. That's a lot of turnips. And while I like turnips, there would be no way in Hades I could eat a half acre of turnips. But luckily, the cattle will, the horses will, the hogs will. You know, they'll all eat that. And I do like the greens, the turnip greens. So I'll eat a lot of the greens. But you gotta be extra careful with the greens and wash them real good, because one bad thing about greens that I usually find is that, you know, especially if it's planted in any kind of a sandy soil, you know, there's rain, and that rain will hit the ground and splash back up, and it'll splash sand back up with it. And then you'll have nice sandy greens, and they're crunchy, nice crunchy sandy greens. So I've gotten to where I have to, like, wash each individual leaf, you know, depending on what kind of field it comes out of. But I'll trade, you know, I'll go over there and like with the turnip field, he just leaves the field open just so people will come and get it. But I'll go over there and I'll pick up maybe two or three dozen turnips and the greens with them. But then I'll drop off a bale of hay there too. And then I have certainly, I have no problem with, plowing a small field for somebody for trade. I'll go and I'll cut hay and for somebody that has a field of hay but they don't have any equipment, I'll cut the hay and I'll take half of the hay as my pay for it. So that's bartering right there. I'm bartering my services, my service of cutting hay. I'm bartering for the actual hay itself. And bartering is a really great skill to have. Now, I, when I was doing the research this week for the show, I saw that there is a TV show called Barter Kings. Now, I haven't seen it. Sam, have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Well, apparently there's some show about guys that barter, and what it's called is Bartering Up. And the theory is, and it's not just a theory, it's actually a pretty common practice, although I was reading another article that saying it was getting harder, is you start trading, and you're always trading up. And it takes a little bit of skill to do this, but you can do it. You could take an item worth $100, and you could trade it to somebody for something worth $150. Then you take that $150 item, and you trade it for somebody who, where you end up getting a $200 or $250 item. And you just keep going until the sky's the limit. And I believe that's what the Barter King show has as its baseline. But there are plenty of stories of people that have done it. I was reading a story about a guy who started out, and I don't know if this is urban legend or not, it sounded like to me, but he started out with some paper clips. And he traded some paper clips, and at the end of his paper clip run, he had a convertible, you know, at the end of his trading, without paying any money or at any point or anything like that. He just kept trading up and kept trading up. There's a reason, if you're a prepper, that you'd like to get good at this and you would like to have some good knowledge of it and a good knowledge of how to do it, because in the event that something happens and you can't get money or you can't get your money out of the bank or whatever the case may be, or money becomes worthless, which it certainly seems like we're on that road now, doesn't it? Like our money is rapidly becoming worthless. And when that happens, a pile of cash isn't going to do you any good. I was looking at a picture. I think I was reading something about inflation the other day. And I was looking at a picture of a German guy in, I believe, in 1920s Germany. He had a wheelbarrow full of cash that he was taking to the baker's to buy a couple of loaves of bread. Because the money had become virtually worthless, and it was taking a wheelbarrow of cash money to buy a couple of loaves of bread. When I was working with a film crew down in Houston on a Chuck Norris movie, some of the folks had just come back off a shoot over in Africa, and they were talking about the country there that the inflation was so bad in that country that they weren't counting out the money, they were just measuring it. They could, you know, they would get paid in a stack of bills, you know, each week in the local currency, and the stack of bills would be like, like about a good 10 or 11 inches high. And then when they went out to eat, they didn't count the money out, they just kind of measured it. They knew that, you know, a half inch of stacked bills was X amount and an inch of bills was about such amount. So they just kind of took a stack and peeled off a half inch to pay for their, for their dinner. When money becomes worthless, then you have to figure out something else. And you need to understand how it works. Now, when I was talking about the trading up earlier, I know that there's a discussion about that, like saying, is it ethical, you know, or is that right? And absolutely it is. As long as both parties in the trade are happy, then how can it be wrong, you know? Now, that doesn't mean that there should be any kind of anything mixed in with that. And by that I mean any kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. You shouldn't be misrepresenting your item or something like that. It should be a fair trade. But that doesn't mean that a person who has something that's worth $150 and you have something that's worth about $100, that doesn't mean that that person may not want to just go ahead and trade you for it, try to trade you even for it. And like I said, as long as both parties are open and honest and they're both satisfied with the trade, then it's a good trade. If you have something that you can trade, and it doesn't have to just be an item. It doesn't have to just be like a bucket of eggs like Sam had, or a bushel of beans or something like that. It could be a skill. you know how to fix a car. Somebody needs a car fixed. They're willing to trade. They're willing to trade you some item to have their car fixed. Then there you go. You've just rendered a service for goods. And I'm sure the government doesn't like this because they're not getting to they're not getting their sales tax off of it. But and so you're saving money. But there's an easy way that you can get started with bartering, and I would recommend you guys give it a try. You can everybody has a Craigslist now in their area. And the Craigslist, I believe, has been reporting over the last couple of months that their bartering section has really skyrocketed. I believe that there was, if I'm correct, that it was over 100% increase. It over doubled in the last year. If you go to the Craigslist in your area, then you can look at things that people that are willing to trade, and there's a ton of stuff that people are willing to trade, and you could decide, figure out something that you want to trade for it. Hold on just a second. I'm looking for, I'm going to go to the barter section here for our, my area. Here we go. I'll read you some of the stuff that people are okay. There's somebody who wants to do automotive repair for. It's several question marks. And they are, they've got it open. They want to do automotive repair for. So you may need something done to your vehicle, say, and you, right now, and you don't have any money. If you take your vehicle down to, over to Walmart or something to get some work done, it, and you say, hey, look, I don't have any cash right now. I'm tight until my next paycheck. Now, how about if I give you this unopened set of dishes that I got from my mother-in-law last year? Would you take that for a tune-up? Oh, absolutely, they're not going to do that, right? But the people here on the barter list are going to do that. They're not asking, this one guy here, he's not asking for something specific. He's saying, I'll do the automotive repair for, and let's make a deal. And that's the way it works on here. Here's another one. 55-gallon freshwater fish tank. And he says he's got a 55-gallon freshwater fish tank along with everything in the pictures, which is filled up with plants and gravel and rocks and everything, and a stand, and but he never had fish in it. And he's waiting for the best offer or something of value. Okay? That's how it's working. And you can do the same thing. You can take something in your home, and you can take a picture of it, put it on Craigslist. It only takes like a couple of minutes to set up an account there. And you can start your trading. I noticed it on Facebook. There's some of these, too. There's some trading and bartering pages on there. And I think it's a great way to get stuff and to get rid of stuff. There's another person that says he has lots of man stuff to sell and trade, and he's interested in things that go boom and man stuff. He also needs some welding done and some other things. Let me know what you have for trade. If multiple items are wanted, we can work something out. I'm pretty open to traders. And then then below it, he lists a long list of stuff that he's willing to trade. So there you go. This is a way that you can be getting stuff that you need. Maybe there's some things that you need. Maybe you need a new faucet for your kitchen sink. If you put that on Craigslist and say, look, I need a new faucet for my kitchen sink, and I'm willing to trade, and here's what I have, or tell me what you need. And it's a good way to get started. All right. The guy who went through the collapse in Argentina several years ago, he's done a lot of writing on the subject, and he's been on several forums, and I've heard him speak on different radio shows and stuff like that. He said this is how everybody was making it in Argentina during the financial collapse. Nobody was trading silver and gold. Mainly probably because people didn't have a lot of it. But nobody was really trading silver or gold for anything. Everything was done through barter. And I can certainly envision that happening here if something goes wrong, because how many people do you know that has a roll of gold coins or a roll of silver? Not a lot of folks. Now, there's more and more because people are starting to understand the need for it. But and certainly, if you have several rolls of pre-1960 silver, then you're probably in good shape. But most people don't. One of the things that I mentioned to you guys several times before, and that the guy in Argentina spoke about, was lighters, the big lighters, you know, the disposable lighters. He mentioned how that those were an extremely hot item for bartering. Now, that's one of the reasons that every time I go to the Dollar General, I have a certain part of my prepping budget that is dedicated to lighters. And so I'll just pick up those blister packs of lighters. Now, something happened last year. I guess they lost wherever they were getting them. But there was a great deal for about a year. You could buy 10 lighters for $2.50, so about 25 cents a lighter. And they were the nice, big, pretty hardy, pretty robust lighters. They lasted a good while. And every time I went into the Dollar General, that was part of my prep budget there. Every time I went in, I picked up a blister pack of the Bic lighters. I've got a Rubbermaid tub with a blister with the Bic lighters in there now. Now, it seems, at least in my area, that they lost those 10 packs, and now they've got kind of the same thing. It's from a different manufacturer, but they're 5 packs. So now it's 50 cents a lighter. But I'm telling you, even if it was a dollar a lighter, you're not going to go wrong by having on hand a stash of Bic lighters that you can use for barter or trade. Okay, because remember we talk about the 5 tenets of survival: water, food, shelter, security, and energy. And energy is going to be a function of fire in most cases. Because you're going to have to have something to start the fire. It can be flint, steel, or anything else. I'm just telling you, it's a lot easier to use a lighter, as people are going to be a lot more willing to trade for a lighter than they are for flint and steel. The lighter just works better. And having a stack of the lighter is going to help you out. Also, things like one of the other things that I've bought in bulk over the years is aspirin. I bought just the regular aspirin in like the 500 and 1,000 tablet containers. And then I sealed it away Now, the aspirin has a pretty decent lifespan. I think it's I think there's actually not a date where it goes bad, especially if you store it in a cool, dry place, and especially if you're going to take it and you're going to pack them away in the foil bags with the oxygen removal pads, and you've got it all sealed up in a cool, dark place, dry, cool, dark, and dry, then it's going to last a good while. And aspirin, of course, is very important for thinning blood, and the thinning of the blood helps keep the temperature down. If people have something that's giving them a fever, something that is causing their temperature to rise, unless you have something that you can use to combat that, you're in great danger. And aspirin is one of the things that that people use to keep their fevers down. So I think it's really good. I certainly have plenty for my own family, and then I've got plenty of that to trade. I also have, we'll talk about seeds in a little bit more depth in just a minute, but I also have a pretty decent amount of seeds, enough for myself and my family, and then enough that I can trade, that I can barter with, because in the event that we did have some type of natural or man-made disaster, and we were not able to get food from the normal sources, then you'll have to rely on either the food that you have stored away, things that you can hunt or that you can harvest, like in animals, or wild plants, or the seeds that you plant yourself. And it's going to be extremely important that you're able to grow as much of your own food as possible. Now, I'm not going to dwell on this anymore, because we're going to talk about it for a second, but in just a minute. But seeds are another thing. I also have a huge amount of pocket knives that I have bought in bulk, and because that's certainly something that you could trade, and you know, you can buy these. Matter of fact, we just bought another 100 from Walmart. Bought 100 pocket knives for $100, and then I have another several hundred that I bought off that cutlery show. But listen, let me tell you, don't buy anything from them. It is not a quality item. And I'm not going to be able to get much as far as my bartering from with these things. But I would probably put it but you can get a lot of them, and you'll certainly be able to get your money back in a writ down situation as far as a trading item. But the Walmart pocket knives were much better quality, much higher quality. And right now they've got a really, really nice folding pocket knife that they'll sell you for $1. And we just went to the website and ordered 100 of them. And they are really good. They're really good. And for $1, it's hard to – you'll certainly get your money back with those. So start thinking about the things – think of the things that you have, and like I said, you can do this now. You can do this with items like almost like a garage sale kind of thing. You can look at items that you have and things that you need, and you may be able to trade your way to it. If you need a spare tire, or if you need some work done on your automobile, or and folks in the gun culture, most of the guys I know have been doing this for a long time with guns and ammunition and stuff like that. You know, the folks in the gun culture, we're pretty used to trading and trading folks for ammunition or for other rifles or pistols or other hunting gear and stuff like that. So this is a way that you can get goods and services without putting out money. And it's good to know how to do this, because you want to be able to be, you need to be a good trader. You need to know how to make a good trade and not to get suckered into something, not to take a low offer or something like that. You need to know how to make a good trade. The best time to learn that is now, before something goes wrong or goes bad. There are also plenty of sites for you to learn how to do this, okay? There is, all you have to do is Google bartering, and there's probably a lot in each state. There's probably a ton of groups and things set up so that you can make trades and stuff there in your local to you. And, you know, for a long time, they still do this. Folks have swap meets. You know, that's where they go somewhere to swap items they have with somebody else in order to get goods or services. And man has been doing this since the beginning of time. And let me take a look here. I'm just gonna pull this up here for the bartering sites. There are a ton of online sites for bartering. You Google bartering sites, it will give you a ton of places where you can get started. All right. Okay, let's move on to, well, before we move on, let's talk real quick about seeds, because I already mentioned it just a minute ago that that having a source of seeds for you and your family is going to be it's going to be very important, because if you can't go and get food from a store or anything like that, then they're going to have to figure out some way to get it. And the only real viable alternative is for you to raise the plants yourself, raise the food yourself. So where are you going to get the seeds? Because let's talk about the seeds just for a second about how this works. Most times when you go into a store and you look at the seeds, you look at the big stacks of seeds and stuff that they have there, you'll see all different kinds of seeds for even just for the same plant. Like if you see all the different kinds of onions they have, all the different kinds of carrots and tomatoes, and there are literally thousands of types of seeds that you could buy. But here's a problem with a lot of those, is that the majority of the seeds that you will buy commercially today are hybrid seeds. I mean, these seeds have been produced in a hybrid fashion, and sometimes they've been genetically modified. And, you know, that's not always a bad thing. It's certainly gotten a bad rap because it's done bad to a great extent nowadays. But people have been genetically modifying seeds for thousands and thousands of years. So here's the problem with the hybrid seeds that you're normally going to encounter commercially, is that in order for you to have a garden that takes care of you into the future, That means that you're going to either have to have enough of those hybrid seeds stored correctly to last you until the food gets back in the store or until you die. You don't want to die because you're not because you're starving, but you're going to have enough seed hybrid seeds to last you because if you plant those hybrid seeds and then you try and harvest the seeds from those plants, it's going to be something else. It's not going to be the type that you planted. And a lot of times, what comes back is either it doesn't germinate or it comes back as some weaker plant or something that's not anything like the seed that you planted because the hybrids don't maintain, they revert back. In order for you to have viable seed of the same type, it needs to be a non-modified seed. And these are generally called heirloom seeds. And thank goodness there's been a large push over the years back towards saving and cultivating and now selling the heirloom quality seeds. And the thing with the heirloom quality seeds is that whenever you get the plant and you plant it and it grows and then you harvest the fruit and then you harvest the seeds from that fruit and you dry them out and you plant them the next year, you're going to have a very high rate of germination, depending on how you take care of the seeds and stuff. You're going to have a high rate of germination and you're going to get the exact thing back that you planted, all right? So you need to make sure that whenever you are stocking up on your seeds, that first of all, you're getting things that you're going to eat. Because I see people all the time buying seeds and saying, oh, this looks pretty or this looks good. And they're buying stuff that no one in their family is going to eat. Now, I'm sure if you get hungry enough, even if you hate squash, you'll eat it. But the best thing to do is make sure that you're buying things that everybody likes. Buying stuff that everybody likes. Now you can certainly buy other things that you know will go well in trades. You know, melons and tomatoes and stuff like that, or things that you can can or put away. But you need to make sure that you are buying things that your family's going to eat. So the first thing you need to do is sit down and figure out the things that your family is going to eat, and then purchase those seeds and make sure that they're heirloom quality seeds. Now, I'm talking to some folks here in Texas, and I'm trying to get them to come on this next week from a company called Texas Ready Seeds. And I'm a distributor for Texas Ready Seeds. And one of the things they do was they'll sell you a complete seed bank and for a certain price, and it will already have a huge amount of seeds in it, depending on how many of your other folks there are in your family, and how much land you have. You can pick up, let me read one of some of these right here. They have one called the Piggy Bank, and this is a $125 package of seeds. You see what it says here. It's recommended for one or two adults wishing to supplement their diet with fresh, nutritious, truly organic produce. Enough seed is provided for a year-round garden for two, along with an excess to hold in reserve in case a particular crop does not do well. All right, so you're going to get 80 varieties of seed, which is about 10,000 seeds, about 2 pounds of it. And they have several different setups that you can purchase, and I also have them tailored to the area of the country that you're in. So if you're up north in the northern bank, or if you're down south in the southern bank, they can provide the needs for you all the way up to, let me read this one, this is the vault. It's recommended for up to 12 adults. Enough seed is provided for year-round garden for a dozen adults with an excess to hold in reserve. And that is over 80 varieties of seed and over 80,000 seeds, as well as a stack of books to go with it. The Edible Garden, The Square Foot Gardener, Backyard Homestead, Seed to Seed, New Self-Sufficient Gardener, and that one's going to cost you $485. But it's a fantastic investment, because these are seeds that are guaranteed to be organic and heirloom quality seeds, and they're going to be specifically selected for your region. They come in these airtight ammunition cans, and I'm telling you that this is something you don't want to be without, and that is a good selection of seeds. All right. I'm going to take, we got a caller on here. It's been on a while. I don't want him to wait too long. I'm going to take him. Richard from
Hey,
Wyoming.
How you doing, Scout? Having a good evening?
Yes, I am. How about yourself?
I'm having an outstanding evening. I did want to talk to you a little bit about gardening, considering I've been at it so long. And I basically fed an awful lot of people out of gardens. And I've learned a few things. And I sure made a lot of mistakes. I'd really like to help people not make those same mistakes that I made. So with that in mind, you know, I do understand the value of heirloom seeds. And I have quite a collection of them. As a matter of fact, I belong to the Iowa Seed Savers Exchange, and have done so for, 35 years or so. And they're a real nice organization. They save seeds from all over, and you just basically exchange your seeds with them, of course only with heirlooms. And that's a great way of getting some kind of special ones. So it's a real nice organization that's out there as well, and people should look into that. You can purchase seeds from them as well. It's really nice for a novice to buy like a package like what you're talking about, because it helps eliminate a lot of the selection process. But that isn't a viable option.
You say it's not a viable option?
I say it is a viable option.
Oh, right,
to look in,
well,
in addition to purchasing, say, prepacked seeds.
Here's the thing, is that you're going to, if you are not into this, if you haven't already been doing it for a while or something like that, then that's one of the things I'm suggesting for folks to do, is a lot of folks have money but no time. And,
exactly.
I think that it's a good deal for those type of folks to go ahead and
I agree with you on that, but I do have a couple of concerns with some things. One of the things is it really takes a long time to really get a garden plot prepped and producible. When you first start out with your average plot, just turned over the soil, if you just turned over the grass, you're not going to have a very good garden.
Now, hold on.
I don't care
now,
if you're
the
best seeds in the world, and you've got the growing conditions.
This is a concern that you have for people to not purchase the seed banks?
No, I'm not telling anybody to not purchase anything. And seeds are a very valuable thing to have.
Okay, well, hold on just a second. Because I think I understand what you're saying, but we're just now starting the gardening section of the show.
So and I understand
about that. Just a minute ago, and so So I understand what you're saying too, but I haven't gotten
well,
to that
seeds
yet
are a good thing to have, and don't get me wrong. But starting to work up an area, I don't know if people really realize how hard it is to get a plot of land truly garden ready. And it's not something that you can, that like if you get yourself in, let's say something falls apart this winter and you've got your seeds. If you're planning on just tilling up a little section of your lawn and expecting it to be a garden, you're going to have issues, and it's going to be a very difficult thing for
right.
you to do.
Right. I'll tell you what let's do, Richard, is hold on just a second. Hold your horses just a second, and we'll go ahead and start the gardening section of the show here, and that way the stuff that you're saying is going to fit in. Because right now it's in bits and pieces, and I want to give folks a chance to understand what you're saying. So let me start off with agreeing with you. And what I wanted to tell folks about the gardening section is that the time to practice or the time to start your gardening phase is well before
your gardening journey,
happens.
As the case may be.
Yeah, because what Richard is saying is absolutely true, and you don't want to wait until your future, your food stock is dependent on this, for you to find out that certain things won't grow in your area, or to find out that to make mistakes, all right? Because
exactly.
I can guarantee you is that you are going to make mistakes, and you're going to make a lot of them probably. And you're going to find some things that do really well without you even touching them, and you're going to find there's some other things that it may be hard or impossible for you to grow no matter what you do. You're going to find out that there are certain pests in your region that are going to destroy you. You're going to find out that if you go and you plant your garden and you planted a really nice garden and things are coming up really great, but you don't have a fence, then you're going to find out how quickly one night is all it takes that your whole garden can be destroyed by one or two adult deer. So these are all the things that you have to figure out now before your life depends on it. And one of the things that Richard brought up a while ago is how you're going to start your garden. And unless you have gardened before, you have some knowledge of it, obviously the smart thing you're going to do for you to do is just start fairly small. And you can't, like he was saying, you can't just, well, the first thing you need to do is you're going to have to locate an area for your garden, all right? So you're going to have to go to your yard or your property. You're going to have to figure out, where am I going to put this garden? And you need to ask yourself some questions about this, because most of the things that you're going to plant in your garden are going to require a good 8 hours of sunlight. So you really can't have a garden area that's shaded, at least not for a large portion of the day. You're going to have a pretty decent amount of sunlight, and depending on what plant it is, it's going to have different sunlight needs. So you'll need to tailor where you're going to put your garden, if you have any choice in that, according to the seeds and stuff that you're going to plant, and then you need a plan. You need to develop a plan of what you're going to plant and where you're going to plant it. And I would recommend that folks start off with something manageable, like maybe just a 4-foot by 4-foot section. And you can get your hands dirty on that and figuring out your needs and the plant's needs whenever you're whenever you're introducing yourself to gardening. And there's also plenty of books that will tell you, there's a Square Foot Gardener. There are plenty of books that will tell you how you can get the absolute most bang for your buck out of every square foot of land that you have. And there's a pretty famous group. I know that they made a lot of folks angry. And now, right now I can't think of the name of it. You know what I'm talking about, Richard, the group out in, I believe it's California. They started I don't remember if they tried to patent permaculture.
I remember some of that. Yeah, they basically they're basically trying to patent age-old procedures.
Right.
In many cases, I do remember hearing of some of that. It was an absolute fail. I mean, I do recall that.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of the group though.
But the point is that these guys were they just had a very small plot of land right around their house, and this was in a downtown area, and they were able to feed not just themselves but big sets of their community with their gardening practices. So you can, even just a small garden can provide a great deal of your family's needs. Now, you're going to have to take a look at your soil and where you're going to plant it. Like Richard was saying, you can't just go out there. You can't turn the ground straight over if it has a thatching of grass and stuff on it, and then plant your seeds directly into it, because you're introducing a whole bunch of different things at once, and that's not a great idea. So what you can do is, a lot of folks, like over the winter, if I'm going to put in a new area, what I'll do is I'll cover the area that I'm going to start up with either black plastic or with other dirt or something over the winter, and then usually it's ready by the spring for me to plant into it. But you're going to have a plan. You're going to have to do some work to get at this. If you're even if you're in the city, you can still have things like raised beds, and you can build yourself a raised bed pretty easy. I've got some buddies over in Alabama who are using hay bales as their planting mediums, and they're doing great. They just take a saw and they cut the center out of the hay bale, and they fill it with their planting medium, and they're planting the plants directly into the hay bales. And,
well, that's an interesting concept, isn't it?
I think the second year they've done this, and they had some really great crops out of this. So,
yeah, you know, and I think that's really important. Look at these. If I may, it's really important to look at these alternative methods, because so many suburban areas, basically, the only ground that you've got around your house is what they excavated from the basement. And basically, that's a real heavy, well, it's whatever material you've got in your general area. And then they put like a half inch or an inch of topsoil on it, and then heavily fertilized grass is what's growing there. And as soon as you get down below that little grass root area, there isn't any topsoil there. So what you're saying is an excellent idea.
Right. But if you do want to plant in the ground, that's fine. But here's what you got to do. Take a look at your soil. Like Richard was saying, you can take a lot of yards, even if people didn't have basements. You know, I've been in construction for 30 years. I've seen how they do it. You know, they scrape the ground clean. They scrape it down to the clay. They'll come in. They'll throw a half inch or an inch of soil down, and then they'll lay the grass on top of it. And that's what you have for your grass. And if that's for your yard, if that's the case, it's not going to do really great for gardening. You know, that grass, a lot of the grass that they put in there, St. Augustine and stuff like that, and the different varieties, are bred to survive in that. But what you'll need to do is you'll need to go out and look at your soil. Find out what kind of soil you have and find out what it needs. If you first, what you can do is you can buy it – fairly inexpensive soil test kit, like from your local gardening shop or something like that.
You can do that,
but keep in mind
you can go to your agricultural extension office, and they'll do, not only will they give you information on the soil in your area, but they'll do basic soil tests for you as well, oftentimes for free.
Right, right. You can do your own soil test. You'll dig a hole, you'll take a shovel, slice off a good section of it, and take a look at it. See, what do you have? Do you have a clay soil, or is it a sandy soil? Is it a humus soil? And whatever it is, you can basically get a good start yourself. If it's a clay soil, you need to add something to break the clay apart, because the clay is very, very fine particles, and whenever they dry out hard and solid, and nothing can grow in it. It doesn't hold nutrients. But you can take and add like a coarse sand to the soil. Don't add beach sand, all right, guys? Don't add beach sand to your soil. There's too much stuff in it that's not good, including salt. But you can add a coarse sand to your clay soil along with compost and peat moss, and that will help break the soil up and put the organics back into it. If you have a sandy soil, then you can add humus. You can add aged manure, and I say aged because you don't want to put fresh manure in unless you're not going to use it for the year, because different types of manure have different potencies, and it takes a little while for them to cool down. It might, if you put in fresh manure in your ground, it may be too hot for your planting. But you can put in aged manure.
Well, don't forget the green manure in the form of alfalfa.
The what now?
Don't forget the green manure in the form of alfalfa, too. That is another quick way of doing it. Raise up a crop of alfalfa.
You could plant some type of a legume or something in your garden if you have time. I'm just talking about if you find out that you have a sandy soil or something like that, then there's things you can add to it. You can add the humus or the aged manure, or peat moss or sawdust. Put some nitrogen in it. You can even add back a little bit of the clay-rich soil back into sand to help bind it. If you have a silky soil, that's the soil that you'll find under pine trees and stuff like that, then you can add coarse sand or compost, maybe a little gravel, horse manure with straw in it, stuff like that. To help even out the sand. Now, if you're starting from scratch with a small field or a large garden that's either been worn out or it's neglected, now that's kind of like a whole different thing. But you can certainly do that too, and you're going to need to. You're going to need to remember that every time you plant something or you grow something in the garden, you're taking stuff out of the ground, and you need to remember that you're going to need to add it back into the ground. All right, and we're going to keep talking about gardening over the next few weeks. You'll need to make a decision on whether you're going to till soil or you're going to create a raised bed. And I have both because there are different things that I want to grow, and I have different ways that I want to grow them. But you can certainly look at having raised beds. That's where you take some kind of a barrier wall or something like that, and you set it up. I used old cross ties, old railroad cross ties that I had, that from a stockpile that I got a long, long time ago. I'm almost out of them. But back in the old days, the railroads would replace their cross ties, and they would just throw the old ones in the ditch, and then the people would come along and pick them up and take them. Now, you can't do that anymore. Don't get caught trying to go and pick up some of those cross ties off the railway right away anymore, because you'll put you in jail. I think all those are always accounted for. They're bundled up and shipped off to Walmart now for $20 a piece. But you can usually, you can still find them in different places, but you can use cross ties. You can use rocks. You can use lumber. You can take some 2x6s or 2x12s and make yourself a raised bed by putting the barriers there in place and then filling it with the soil that you've made. Now, this does a couple of things. You know, it allows you to completely hand mix the soil that you're going to put in there. And it also makes the soil, gives the soil good drainage so that the planting ground isn't staying wet. Now, Rick brought up another thing, too, a while ago that's sitting here on my list, and that is talking to folks, especially in your local area, that know what's going on in your local area. Now, most of the universities and, of course, the state and the county, too, will have an agricultural extension service. You can just look at it. You can Google it, usually through your county, Milam County, Bell County, Williamson County, Agricultural Extension Service. And they have guys there that are university graduates in agriculture, and they will be able to tell you, they'll be able to give you a lot of good hints on how to get started. And then, of course, if you have access to the Internet, then the possibilities are endless, because when I was Googling gardening and how to get started gardening, there are thousands of articles and folks. And one of the best ways I've found of getting information nowadays on just about anything, and it's all the way from changing the electric motor in your car window, to fixing a lawnmower, to whatever it is, there's always a dozen forums online where you can go and you can ask people for free how they did something or how to do something or to get an answer to your question, what kind of pesticides you can use or how can you keep the bugs off your crops and have them still remain organic. There are literally hundreds, especially for gardening, because you know, gardening is a huge pastime for most folks and a source of income for a lot of folks too. But you can go online and you can find hundreds of sites with folks that have a ton of information, and they're willing to share it with you for free. And just about any time you're in any large group of folks, if you stood up and said, hey, can somebody answer some questions for me about gardening? I don't care what income bracket you're in, what race, gender, culture, whatever, you're always going to get several people that are going to stand up and say, hey, I'll be glad to help you. Because there are a
lot of
folks.
You couldn't be more right in that, Scout. You're absolutely that is spot on. Just make sure that you're not getting Florida advice if you live in Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, because what grows down there may not grow for you. That's one of the advantages of the local. But the other thing that I've found that's really helped me out is to make sure I print hard copies of important information, because if we get into a grid down situation, those forums are gone. And, boy, I'll tell you what, it's so hard for me to remember what I learned 2 or 3 years ago, and then I'm trying to look back and did I save that? Where did I put that? I've even got extra hard drives, and I put stuff on other drives. But, boy, I'll tell you, there's nothing like a three-ring binder with important information in it.
Right, and I was just getting ready to get to that, and because that is called, or that is what I like to call the journal. And almost anybody who is serious about gardening has a journal. And matter of fact, that's how one of the oldest journals in America got started. Farmer's Almanac. That's right, which is a wealth of information. I don't care if you read the ones that were written over 100 years ago. They're full of the information, and this isn't theoretical information or stuff like that. These are the people that went out there and they did it, And they found out what worked and what didn't work. And I'm telling you, the Old Farmer's Almanac is a tremendous wealth of information, and it'll tell you everything from what when to plant in your area, what to do, what not to do. But you're going to need to keep a journal, just like Richard was just saying. You really need to keep a journal, because I'm the same way, and it is really easy to forget something or leave something out that you need to do, and you're going to take the notes that you're getting offline. You're going to go ahead and print those out, put them in a three-ring binder, but then you're also going to write down the things that you did that worked and didn't work. You know, planted on such and such a date, the crops were ready by such and such a date. The only way, and people will give you, they will tell you, like the seed packages and stuff that will tell you when your crops are going to be ready, and they'll have a pretty good idea of when it is. But every plant is going to be different for every location. So the stuff on your package is good general information. The only way you're going to find out for sure how long it takes for something to grow to maturity is by doing it yourself and keeping the notes on it. And you can find out you can find out things that work and don't work, and then you can write them down to make sure that you don't accidentally repeat them or any of the mistakes that you made, that you don't repeat them. And it's a good way for you to understand how your particular garden is running. And right now, if you do it right now, then it's just a fun hobby. And if you lose all of your tomatoes, well, so be it. That means you'll have to buy them from the store. But if it's a situation where you're counting on every single tomato in order to get you through to the next year, then this is a very important thing. It's a very serious business. And
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more that the aspects that are required to try to actually fulfill your needs for a year, and I've done it.
Right.
You've got to expect a percentage of catastrophe every single year. If it doesn't happen, you're golden. And then you're trying to give the stuff away because you got so much. But
right.
1 year I had a tremendous locust problem. And it was completely out of the norm. All of a sudden there was thousands of locusts. And, you know, in that particular year, around the perimeter of the garden, I had to use some very strong pesticide because they were going to wipe it out. I mean, there were just thousands of them. I tried not to spray my plants.
I had grasshoppers.
But I did have to have some pesticide to perimeter the garden just to cut down on it.
Right. I had grasshoppers,
and
I had so many.
Don't be afraid of fertilizers either. If you've got to have that garden
out there on it, and the grasshoppers came so quickly that it was overnight. They were fine the one day, and then the grasshoppers showed up. And by the next morning, all of the leaves were eaten off all of the plants, and they were done. The only thing I had the two things that lasted a little bit longer were the tomatoes and the watermelons and cantaloupes. They seemed to not want to eat those all right at first, but they eventually did. And I put so much seven dust out on the plant that finally at the end of it I said, you know, I don't even want to eat these now because they're solid white from the seven dust. I just really don't want to eat it. But they ate every single leaf, and even the tomatoes and watermelons and cantaloupes, they ate every single leaf off of them finally. So it wasn't hard to find the tomatoes because the stalks were bare except for the tomatoes. The vines were bare except for the cantaloupes and watermelons. But you had to harvest them then because there are no leaves left. But that has happened during two planting seasons over the last 10 years, and I'm sure it's going to happen again. Like I said earlier, if you wait to put a fence up around your garden, and you go out one morning and you find that a fourth of the acre that you planted disappeared overnight because of one or two deer, then you're going to be in sad shape. If those deer, right after you planted that corn and it got about 6 or 7 inches high, then a deer can eat several hundred plants very easily in one night.
Well, you know, rabbits can be absolutely devastating to your plants too, especially when they're first coming up, because they're just germinating, they're just coming up, and they'll eat off every one of them. And one of the things that I found is, in order to make a fence worthwhile, you actually have to bury down at least hardware cloth of some type, at least down a foot and making an L shape at the bottom so they can't dig underneath it, because the little buggers will dig right underneath your fence too. That is something that has happened to me. And now I know to make sure I've got a fence down inside the soil itself, for the burrowing animals, because they'll just dig right underneath your fence and just hop right in.
Right, and there's different things you can do, like putting a fence up, putting a addition to the fence that will keep something from going under it. You can do things like, I remember after the first year that I got the grasshoppers, and I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm gonna get some guineas, and the guineas will take care of those grasshoppers. But here's the thing, you know, if you're going to do that, then you'll have to build a completely enclosed garden with a roof and everything else, because if not, the guineas can just go where they want to go, and there's grasshoppers everywhere, and then they'll go and they'll roost in your barn right over your table, and they'll put out about 2 to 3 gallons of manure every night right on top of your workbench. But there are ways that you can use things in conjunction with each other. You can use things like chickens, to keep the bugs out of your garden. There are ways that you can plant other items in the garden to help drive away the pests. You can plant rows of onions interspersed in there. There are different things that you can plant in your gardens to help
marigold.
Keep the bugs out. Yeah. And we'll talk about this more as the week goes by, but I just want to get folks familiar or at least introduced to the fact that if you in your prepping plan, if it says seeds and a garden, and you're thinking about having a garden to help provide you with food, and I'm going to tell you, there's really no other way that you're going to make it without growing some of your own food. There is no other way, unless you have, a couple of million dollars, and that is adjusted dollars for grid down dollars. By that I mean, if you have a couple of million Bic lighters and hunting knives and everything else you're willing to trade, there's no way you're going to make it without growing some of your own food. There's just no way. You're going to have to. So this has to be part of your plan. And if it is part of your plan and you're going to end up depending on it, then you've got to know what you're doing. You have to know what you're doing. That means you've got to grow some crops now. You've got to grow some so that you can start figuring out what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, the things that are going to work and the things that aren't. You're going to have to start doing it now. And it's not that hard. And I'm not telling you that you have to go out and plow up a couple of acres. You can start with just just one of those wash tubs that you can get at Tractor Supply or something like that. You can just start with
I'm going to tell you, if you had a 2-acre garden, you've got a full-time job.
Right.
That's a guarantee. If you think you're going to maintain a 2-acre garden on a part-time basis, you're not. 2-acre garden, and you better have 10 people ready to help you can when the time comes, because it always comes at the same doggone time. And canning is a whole other thing.
But at the same time, you don't need a 2-acre garden if it's just you and one other person. You're not going to need a 2-acre garden if you do it right.
Well, unless you're planning on bartering.
You're going to be able to get enough food from just a small plot. That's what I'm saying. You start now and start figuring out how much you're going to get from different ways of gardening. I remember a couple of years ago I did a thing called what was it called? It's a Japanese, I can't remember the name of it now. Anyway, it's what you do is you just make you'll take some fence wire, like chicken wire or something like that, maybe something a little bit stronger at first, like some field wire, and you make it into a cylinder, and it's only like about 24 to 36 inches across, and then you work the soil where you're going to put it, and it only has to be about a foot larger in diameter than what you're planting. And then you start building a compost pile inside the cylinder. All right, you guys, it's not hard to do. You're going to put down some soil and then some straw and then some aged manure, some more soil, some more straw, and the different things that you're going to compost. And you're going to build that up probably about 36 to 48 inches or so. And then you're going to plant your four to six tomato plants around the outside of this. And what this is doing is it's going to be the fertilizer for these tomato plants, Japanese tomato ring, that's what it was called. And then you can the tomato plants to the field wire as they grow up. And let me tell you, this one, I think I only had four plants. Anyway, the four plants made, I think, well over 200 pounds on just the four plants. That's my fault. And so the point I'm trying to make is that you don't always need a whole lot of ground to support yourself. You can get some buckets. You can put some container gardens up. Things like tomatoes. Most people that are gardening in containers are usually gardening some tomatoes. Some of the things that don't take up a whole lot of space. I planted some peppers, several different varieties of peppers in containers one time, and made all that I needed for myself. It doesn't take a whole lot of space for you to get started. And once again, there's plenty of resources out there that you can look at. Square Foot Gardening is one of the most talked about books because that's one of their whole premises is they're going to tell you how to get the most for you from every square foot of ground on your property. So, so certainly that's a great place to start. All right, did you have anything else that you wanted to?
You're doing a pretty good job. I think you're doing a pretty good job. I'm not opposed to using non-heirloom seeds for a number of crops. And there's a reason that they make a lot of the hybrids because you just get higher yields and things like that. And I realize you can't save the seeds. I do understand that. And some things I do use heirloom seeds for. And I actually do harvest some seeds, and replant those every year. But one of the advantages I have is I'm very far away from other people, and I don't have to worry about what they're growing cross-pollinating my crops. So, I maintain the heirloom.
You will have trouble with that. Even if you're growing, two different varieties of heirlooms in your garden, then you're going to end up with some cross.
You're going to end up with a hybrid.
You'll have to pay attention to what you're doing and how you're doing it. If you want to keep the varieties that you have, if you want to keep them pure, and a lot of times it's not that hard because you can go out there and manually pollinate it and then close it off so that it doesn't get any more. There's
right.
different things you can do. But and I'm not saying that you can't use hybrids. I'm just saying, you know, for certain things. And there's no reason that you can't include some hybrids in your prep. But I think the majority of your prep should be heirloom seeds. But there's no reason
The thing though with a lot of the hybrids that they've done is they've cured things like in a lot of cases like tomato mosaic and things of that nature, which you know, if you know, there's good reason to have some of those disease resistant or drought resistant versions depending on your scenario. And they do keep a good long time, so you should keep some of the inexpensive. I buy them after the sale's over for the year. I buy them a little bit later in the year. You know, I get them for cents on the dollar, and I keep those in my quiver. Not that I, you know, am pushing hybrid seeds. I'm certainly not. But you can get them for, you know, 10, 20 cents on the dollar, and having a bunch of those in your quiver certainly doesn't hurt. And one other thing, and I'm going to close with this. I am going to close with this. When we get into canning, I want to bring back a lot of things because I've canned for so many years, and I've learned a lot of things about canning. But the final thing I want to say is a couple of years ago, I got snowed in for a couple months. I live way out in the middle of nowhere, and I got into a lot of my prep foods. And you know what happened to me? I got indigestion, and I got indigestion really bad. This might be funny, but I'm telling you what. There's a lot worse things you can have for barter than a few caseloads of Tums and or antacids. Because I'll tell you what, as people's diet changes, they're going to get indigestion too. And I'll tell you what, you'll pay an awful lot for a tab of fatidamide or one of those if your gut's killing you.
Well, the medical or first aid list that I put out has a pretty lengthy section on it for.
I'm not disputing that. I'm talking about
indigestion and for constipation and stuff like that because of that fact. Because when
right, but I'm just saying I'm not necessarily dissing on you for that. I'm just saying a couple of cases of cheap
aid. I know you're not dissing. I know you're not dissing. I'm trying to explain it to you. And that is that on the list that I put out for the first aid and medical has those specific things in it because of that. And that's what I wrote out there is that you can certainly expect to get, some folks are certainly expect to get indigestion or constipation because you're radically changing your diet. So I said you need to keep these items on hand in order to deal with that. Because
right, but I'm thinking
right.
about the entire population experiencing this, and I'm just thinking it would be an extremely valuable barter item.
Right, right.
You know,
thank you very much
if you can get them in some kind of bulk, a 100 rolls of Tums that buy you an awful lot.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you very much, Richard. I appreciate you calling.
You have a wonderful evening, and I'll be listening further.
All right. Thank you, sir. He's absolutely right. If you change your diet and you start eating, especially if you're going to start eating stuff that you're not usually eating, and certainly if you start eating just MREs, you're going to get something happening to you. I'm telling you. The one of the things you could certainly make money on quick, I think, and I told this to a buddy of mine who's an airline pilot, and he took me up on it because he flies to a lot of places that have duty-free shops. So now every time he goes, he'll buy several quarts of whiskey or vodka or whatever, you know, whatever it is. He's not a drinker, but you know, he stocked up a big pantry full of those, and then he'll buy his limit on cigarettes, cartons of cigarettes. And I'm telling you right now that money that you invest in that is never going to be wasted. And it also doesn't take the end of the world for you to make your money back. People that smoke cigarettes, they want to smoke cigarettes. And all it would take would be, a 3-day power outage where they couldn't get them. You could certainly sell the cigarettes for basically whatever the market would bear. I'm telling you, folks are going to want to buy them. So even if you don't smoke, investing in something like, 15, 20 cartons of cigarettes is always going to get your money back, right? Always. Same thing with alcohol. I personally don't store a bunch of alcohol because that's one of the things that I'm not that interested in trading because of other things that go along with it. We'll talk more about that. Now, I am going to have somebody come on and talk to you about making alcohol, about building a still and making alcohol, which is illegal. But alcohol is one of the things that is tremendously important in things like collapses and cessation of services and stuff like that for a lot of different reasons, not for drinking, but for a lot of other reasons. And there should be, if you have the skill to make it, if you teach yourself how to make it, then you'll be in pretty good shape, all right? So, but we'll have somebody that's going to come on and talk about that specific skill. And we're going to have folks coming on. Like I said, I'm not sure if they're going to be on this next week or not. I asked them if they wanted to come on this next week to talk to you about seeds and varieties. I know one of the things I wanted to mention was it, which was right, as far as saving or keeping hybrids in your seed bank. Absolutely. There's no reason you can't do that. Most seeds, depending on how they're stored, will last a pretty decent amount of time. Tomatoes, beans, stuff like that, they'll go 5 to 7 years, if you store them right. And some will go even a little bit longer. Some don't, especially if they're not stored right, or if you are harvesting the seeds and you're not drying them out completely before you put them into their storage containers. If they're mishandled, one of the things you don't want to do is you don't want to put your fingers on the seeds a lot. They need to be kept dry and dirt and oil free and everything like that. So you don't want to be putting your fingers on the seeds a lot. But the seeds will last a pretty decent amount of time. But here's the thing I wanted to interject in there though. Is that, yeah, some of the heirlooms don't have some of the hybridized resistance to disease and stuff like that. But, and this isn't just for survival. This is for your dinner plate. And that what I want to say is that when you go to the grocery store, normally there's only one or two rows of tomatoes. Now, you can go to some places that have more. They have a lot of different, but even those will only have, 5, 6, 7 varieties that are normally grown by some large vegetable company. And I got to tell you that most of the tomatoes that you can get in a grocery store are not, they don't taste the way tomatoes are supposed to taste, all right? That's what I'm trying to say, is that you can get some of the hybrids and plant them and grow them. You bring them into your table and you taste these tomatoes, and you're going to be absolutely astounded by the different taste that you can get from some of the heirloom plants, from the the tomatoes and the beans and the squashes and things like that, the varieties that you can get. Because normally, like I said, in the store, you go in there and you have only a few choices, one or two choices of tomatoes, one or two choices of potatoes. You get either a red delicious apple or a Granny Smith. Tell you, if you want to see some difference in apples and taste the way the apples should taste, go up to New England sometime and eat some of the apples that they have up there. It's a whole different world, I'm telling you. Their way that these things taste. A lot of the hybridization and a lot of the abilities to make the plants resistant and stuff like that, I think have come at the cost of a lot of flavor. And some of the heirloom tomatoes that you can get, I keep saying tomatoes because that's the most experience I have, and plus I really like tomatoes. The taste is just out of this world. You eat one of these, and then you try a forkful of the of just the regular, you know, Walmart variety, Big Boy, or something like that, and it's two different worlds, right? and you'll need to keep your seeds that you're going to plant. You'll need to keep them in a nice, cool, very dry place. And it needs to be something that the insects and the rodents and stuff can't get into. What I've been doing is I'll take my my seed packets and I put them into a mason jar or any kind of jar that I get, you know, that maybe it's had something in it that we ate. Some of the pizza sauce or, you know, anything like that that has glass container that has a good airtight top on it. I'll take those, wash them out really good, dry them out really good, and I'll take the seeds and put the dates on the seeds and when I've got them, and then I'll put them into the glass jars, put the lid on tight, and I'll also drop in a oxygen eater and a moisture collector so that the containers are staying as dry as they can, and they keep them in a cool, dark place. And that should extend the life on them. And I saw somebody put into the chat room that they have found seeds from as long ago as 3,000 years. They were found in the pyramids, and that's true. And then after 3,000 years in the tomb, they took them out and planted them. I think there were different kinds of like barley and wheat and stuff like that. And some of the barley came up after 3,000 years in storage. And that could possibly happen to you. I got to tell you that the pyramids are pretty notoriously dry, and it's going to be cool and dark down inside them. I wouldn't count on more than what the label says. I would make sure that I dated the seeds and on the package, and then on the outside of wherever you're storing them in. They got to be stored in something that the rodents can't eat their way into or the bugs, and then be sure and change those out periodically. All right, plant the seeds that are about to go out. You take those out and you plant those. Plant those, I wanted to get over starting seeds, how to start your seeds, but we'll cover that at another time. That deserves a good amount of time to talk to it, because starting your a lot of people go to the Lowe's or Home Depot or Walmart or their local hardware store, and they buy plants that are already germinated. You can get, you know, four or five plants for $2 or $3. And that's a good deal, right? I mean, for the people that are selling those, because you can get 800 or 900 plants out of your package of seeds for a dollar if you do it right. and there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to do it right. And we'll talk about how you can do that on another program. We'll talk more about soil preparation and about maintaining the soil also. And we'll have some more tips on that. Richard, he's there in the chat room, and he says, don't plant tomatoes in the same spot every year to help prevent the tomato mosaic. And that's absolutely right. Matter of fact, you should have a plan on rotating the crops in your garden so that you're not planting them the exact same over your time, because this will help cut down on things like disease that could be left in the soil. It'll also help by planting certain other plants into the soil to help put stuff back into the soil. If you plant different things like we were talking about earlier about things like nitrogen-fixing legumes, you could plant in your garden to help maintain the soil. And we'll talk about all that in more detail as we go along. Because I want to talk about gardening a decent amount because it's really important, right? And I know it's not as glamorous or as sexy as shooting, but here's the thing. In my 53 years, I've been in, I've probably been in about a dozen situations that were gunfights and knives that were very serious. I've probably been in, I don't know, 60, 70 fisticuff type fights. And if you average that out, you could maybe come to one or one and a half times in the course of the 53 years that I've needed to defend myself with my hands or with a firearm or a knife. But every single day of those 53 years, for the most part, there's quite a few days I missed in college, but every single day I've needed to eat something, right? So which is going to be more important? Is it going to be the gun and the bullets, or is it going to be the garden? Now, certainly, you want to have a gun and bullets to protect the garden. But I'm telling you, without the garden, the gun and bullets aren't going to do you any good. You're not going to be able to eat them, all right? You're going to need to make sure you have a way to feed yourself. And so we're going to devote a decent amount of time to talking about gardening in the next few weeks. And I'd like for you guys, there's got to be a lot of you guys that are listening to this show that have way more experience in this than I do. And I'm going to need you guys, like Richard, I'm going to need you guys to call in and add your knowledge to this so that the folks can benefit from it. Because knowledge is only... it only has a value if you share it. You could be the smartest man in the world. You could know how to build a continuous motion device. You could have the answer to all of the diseases we have, everything. But unless you actually shared that knowledge with someone else, it would be worthless, all right? So I need you guys to help out. All right. I want to touch on hold on just a second. I wanted to touch on promotions. All right. And one of the things that I want to talk to you tonight about is your community calendars. All right. You have every city, town in the nation. If it has more than 3 or 4 people in it, and usually it only takes is one person, will have a community calendar. And because Appleseed is a nonprofit, you've got a good chance on getting on to the community calendar free, right? And a lot of community calendars, they won't let you put any commercial stuff on because then it would just turn into one big advertisement. However, if it's something like a nonprofit, then they'll let you go ahead and do it. And, you know, each one's going to be different. You'll just have to, you'll have to submit it and see what they will let you do. What I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you guys through setting up the community calendar. All right, I'm going to start with, I Google Community Calendar Temple, Texas. And we're going to go through putting it on here. All right, I went to the city of Temple Community Calendar, and I'm going to find out how to put this on here. I'm going to talk you through putting it on here. Hold on just a second here. I don't think that I don't think I've ever used this one. I think that they would not let me put it on there, but I'm going to try it again. I'm going to try and put it on here again. Okay. Well, I'm not seeing the, let me go to another one. Okay. This must be, must just be run by the city. I mean, you know, maintained by it. All right. Let me get another one here. Anyway, everyone has a community calendar, and there's not just one. There's usually a community calendar for almost everything in the city. And like here in Temple, there is the community calendar for the two local television stations, community calendar for the Chamber of Commerce. And then there are probably a dozen different community calendars that are different types of independent community calendars, because somebody's figured out that they can make money by advertising, by putting out a community calendar and advertising on it. And so that's what they've done. They started an independent community calendar labeled Temple, Texas, and they let you put stuff on there, and then they're making money from the advertisers on it. All right, so I'm on the KCEN-TV page, and I put in that I want to set up an account. I go to it. I put in my email address, my username, my password, all the rest of the stuff, and then I submit it, and then I get the create an event page. I put in who I am, who is doing the event. The Appleseed Project, I put in the Appleseed Project address for our homepage. I put in the dates that the events are going to be held, and I can do it on this one submit form. I can do multiple dates, so I can do all of the dates for the year just on this one page. All right, now I hit submit, and that's going in. And now what it does is it goes to someone who's monitoring this, and they take a look at it, and they make sure that I'm not putting up something that's wrong, that's bad, or that it's a scam or anything else, and they're going to okay it. Once you okay it, and then it goes on to the onto the web page, onto the calendar. And there it is. That's how long it took. And now we'll be waiting to get on the KCENTV.com calendar. Now, there are another, I think that there are six calendars here that I keep us on. And you can do the same thing yourself. And it only takes a couple of minutes. Now, is this going to produce a flood, a tsunami of people knocking down your door to get to the Apple feed? No, it's not. There's actually nothing that's going to be able to do that unless you run it a television station and you put down that you're giving away free garands if people come to an Apple seed, then that might generate a tsunami, but I don't know. You know, maybe it wouldn't. What this will do, though, is it's going to add to your promotions plan, because now that you've done this, now you don't have to go back to it, all right? But it is going to sit there and work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all month long, all 12 months of the year. This is going to be working for you. When somebody says, hey, what's going on this week? And apparently a lot of people use these because they charge a pretty decent bit to advertise in them. So I checked one time to see how much it would be to put an advertisement up in there. And it's a pretty decent amount. And you can only do that if people are getting a return for their money. You understand what I'm saying? Same thing with the billboards and stuff like that. They charge a lot for the billboards. The billboards that I got for Appleseed in Temple, I think that those were, if we were paying the commercial price instead of the nonprofit price, we would have been paying about $12,000 a month. As it was, we were only paying about $100 a month. So for $1,000, we got about $120,000 worth of advertising. Now, this works the same way, the calendars. Every time you add another page to your plan, then, like I said, don't expect a tsunami, but it's going to be working 24 hours a day, introducing people to Appleseed, because people are going to see the Appleseed project on there, and they're going to go, what's this? They're going to click on it, and they're going to get an introduction to what the program is. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go. They may not like to shoot, but they're still going to get introduced to it. And maybe they do like to shoot. And even that doesn't mean they're going to go, but they're going to get an introduction to it. They're going to hear about it here first, then they're going to hear about it somewhere else, and then they're going to hear about it somewhere else, and then finally they're going to go. So what you're doing is you're adding another way for folks to hear about Appleseed, and that's something else that's going to work for you. And like I said, these are the easiest things that you can do. It only takes a couple of minutes, and You could probably do 2 of these in about 15 minutes, and then they're going to work the rest of the year for you. They're going to be running 24 hours a day, working for you. You don't have to feed them. You don't have to pay them. You don't have to thank them. They're just going to be sitting there running, all right? So be sure and add putting your events on the community calendar. Like I said, it's not going to – I don't know how many people you're going to get out of this. Maybe none, but people do look at them, and it's free and easy to do. So take a minute to do that. All right, we're down to the last few minutes of the show here. What I'd like to do now is remind folks that Battle Road USA is the one that actually pays the bills for me to do the radio show. Nobody else pays me. I've never gotten a dime from Appleseed or anybody else. I pay the bills for Appleseed Radio every year. I have ever since it started. And it's not just a little bit either. gotten fairly expensive, not only just in money, but in time. You can do the math. If it takes me 4 hours, minimum 4 hours to load the show, to sit here and do the show, and then to do whatever research I'm doing or contacting guests stuff, but that turns out to be 4 hours. It's usually a minimum of 3 to 4 hours per show, and it's over 50 shows a year, then that's 25 8-hour days, right? So that's a lot of time that that I devote to this, and I do it because I'm hoping in some way that it is helping, all right? All right, and Battle Road USA right now is paying, literally paying the price tag. This, the charge goes straight to the Battle Road USA bank account. All right, what I'd like to let you guys know is that we are coming up, it's a short 3 weeks from the Battle Road USA End of the World as We Know It, Zombie Destruction Run and Gun. And we still got some tickets left for that. This is the 4.5-mile looping course with 8 shooting stations for rifle and pistol. And there are going to be obstacles in between each of the stations. Now, listen, you don't have to be Spetsnaz or Delta to do this event. We have specifically made it so that if you're just starting out in competition, this is something that you can do, all right? But it's not a baby course either, all right? It's going to be challenging. But I'm telling you, unless you want to run, you don't have to run the 4.5 miles. Some folks do, all right? But you don't have to. You can walk the course. But there's going to be obstacles in between each of these stations. There'll be 8 shooting stations, some rifle, some pistol. And it's $100, and you'll get a meal and a T-shirt with that. A good chance to hang out with your friends. This is October 12th. Good chance to hang out with your friends. Most importantly, it's a good chance for you to see how your gear is going to work. People tell me all the time, hey, if something happens, I'm going to use this rifle. I'm going to carry my mags like this. I'm going to use this pistol. I'm going to hold it. I'm going to put it on my gear like this. I'm going to wear this backpack. I'm going to carry my water this way. I'm going to wear these boots. And yet these people may not have ever walked even 100 yards in this gear. They don't know that it's going to work at all. The only way they're going to know is if they try it. Listen, why would you wait until something happens in order to find out that there's something wrong with your gear or that you need more training or that your glasses fall off or whatever? Come out to the October 12th. Battle Road USA, End of the World Run and Gun, and test out your gear. Bring your friends. Make them check. Test out their gear, too. All right? You can find more about it at battleroadusa.com. Okay, I want to thank everybody that listening tonight and everybody that's going to be listening in the archives, and we'll see you this next Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central.
As a teenage boy, I found out just how free is free.